We're told by Jonathan Kramer that, like most 19th century composers, Robert Schumann was quite comfortable composing programmatic music. The ties between literary and musical arts were strong during the Romantic era, when composers readily sought inspiration in literature and other extra-musical areas. There is a difference between what is an appropriate stimulus for a composer and what is useful information for a listener, though. In that regard, Schumann hesitated to share with the public too much of the extra-musical origins of his compositions. He said, "We must not show our heart to the world. A general impression of a work of art is better. At least no preposterous comparisons can be made." This symphony, the Rhenish Symphony, is based on a program, but only vague hints of its nature have been preserved, mostly in Clara Schumann's diaries. The composer apparently wanted to portray folk life on the Rhine River, where he had recently moved to become music director of the city of Düsseldorf. The scherzo was inspired by a morning on the Rhine, and the fourth movement found its origin in the ceremony at which the Archbishop von Geisel was made cardinal in Cologne. That movement was originally titled in the manner of an accompaniment to a solemn ceremony. The middle three movements of the Rhenish Symphony seem wonderfully evocative, and it is only natural to wonder what is being evoked. The leisurely scherzo could readily call to mind a mist and shrouded morning by the river, and the resonant chorale harmonies and rich counterpoint of the fourth movement do indeed seem to suggest a ceremony. But is this so because we know their inspiration, or are such suggestions really in the music? The third movement seems equally evocative, but we do not know its programmatic origins. It's therefore harder to pinpoint the evocation there. The three movements actually form a group of character pieces, much like those found in Schumann's piano music, and it's clear that their respective characters derive from more or less specific references. We might borrow Kramer's opening line and tweak it a bit to suggest, like many orchestral conductors, Gerardo Edelstein is quite comfortable conducting programmatic music, works like the Rhenish Symphony. But he's also like Schumann as he speaks about what moves him in pieces like this. "We must not show our heart to the world. A general impression of a work of art is better," as Schumann said, so as not to limit listeners as they experience the music in their own way. Symphony No. 3 of Robert Schumann, the Rhenish Symphony, is the concluding work of the final concert of the 2024-2025 season of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, taking place this Tuesday, May 13th, at the Community Arts Center. We had a chance to speak by phone with Gerardo Edelstein, the orchestra's music director and conductor, about why he's especially excited to bring this program to Williamsport.
You know, I always say, when they ask me, what is your favorite composer? What is your favorite concert you have conducted? And I always say, of course, the one that I am either preparing, the composer that I am working on at this particular time. And so I can say now that this will be my favorite concert next week, coming week, on Tuesday, because there are also three amazing composers, and starting with Berlioz, the Roman Carnival Overture, followed by one of the most beloved violin concertos, the Sibelius Violin Concerto, with guest artist Peter Sirotin, a concertmaster of the Harrisburg Symphony, and closing with one of my favorite symphonies, Schumann's Symphony No. 3, also called the Rhenish.
Let me ask you about the Berlioz, because that's how you would be starting. Berlioz has written such remarkable music, and yet he doesn't seem to be quite a fan favorite. He is a B, but not one of the three Bs.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that mainly what happens to Berlioz is that he lived during a transitional period from the classical to the romantic period, and he was a pioneer of, you know, romantic music. He wrote his amazing Sinfonia Fantastique only 4 years after Beethoven died, and it's a very revolutionary piece. The symphony with five movements based on a program in some dreams, and even him taking opium and start dreaming. And it completely revolutionized the world of music. People couldn't understand what was going on. Orchestrations much bigger, much more adventurous, harmonic and melodic lines approaching general in form. And this piece that we are going to perform is called the Roman Carnival Overture, that was intended to be part of his Benvenuto Cellini opera. He didn't make it at the end to this opera, but he was so successful as an independent piece that is, you know, remained in the repertoire until these days. It's based on, you know, just Roman or Italian folk tunes that we can hear throughout, especially the faster section of it. You know, you can hear a tarantella. It's extremely virtuosic, has a beautiful solo for the English horn, and I think that it's the perfect piece to start our last concert.
Speaking of joy-filled music, even though this work that Sibelius composed, his violin concerto, a masterwork indeed, he was having some struggles as he got started composing it.
Yeah, I mean, Sibelius, just one of the greatest late Romantic composers. He actually composed this concerto between 1903 and 1904, supposed to dedicate this concerto to a friend of his, that after that he changed his mind, somebody else played it very badly on the premiere, so he had to rewrite it and basically perform it again. He was that lucky that the second performance was with the Vienna Philharmonic and Richard Strauss conducting, and started being more accepted and more successful. And, you know, Sibelius was a violinist himself, and actually he did audition in Vienna, but he didn't get the job. So he decided to continue as a composer. And yes, I mean, there are many stories about Finland during that period, and he trying to get away for political reasons and living with his family, you know, somewhere else. And so in his music, we can always feel a little bit of that, a little bit of darkness, a little bit of you know, when you leave your place, some kind of feelings about your early life and nostalgia, and that's what we can hear. These also, we can hear the influence of Mendelssohn in his music, sometimes a little bit of Beethoven, but you know, the concerto start with these very, very soft violins playing, accompanying when the solo comes with this gorgeous, beautiful melody that develops throughout the movement. There is a huge cadenza in the middle of the first movement, very virtuosic, very difficult. And then second movement becomes less struggling, with much more quieter and relaxed melodies. There is only one orchestral moment of intensity, and the last movement, it's a riot. It's one of those very folky and upbeat movements that ends the concerto very upbeat and exciting. Even though, I have to say this again, even though we still feel a little bit of the nostalgia there, a little bit of the darkness and the struggles that he could have had personally, but also from his homeland.
And didn't Sir Donald Tovey refer to the movement as a Polonaise for polar bears?
Yeah, I love that. I never heard that, but yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, I absolutely love that, yes.
Introduce us to Peter, please.
Yeah, so Peter Sirotin is the concertmaster of the Harrisburg Symphony. I had the pleasure to talk to him, but not yet to meet him personally, It was highly recommended by many of my colleagues. And of course, today you can go online and listen to recordings and watching some videos. And he's absolutely outstanding, an incredible musician with a beautiful, beautiful tone. He came from Ukraine and has been performing and teaching also for many years. And I thought it would be great, also because of the distance. We are not that far from Harrisburg, to bring him here and show our community such an incredible musician.
And Gerardo, how about the relationship between the violin and the orchestra? Is it a dialogue, a conversation? Is it antagonistic? Both?
It's a great question, Erica, because I think that from the technical, compositional point of view, this is, you know, the perfect example of a perfect concerto. Because, you know, the violin, although it's an instrument who projects really well, if a composer wants to completely overrule the solo, can do it, you know, with lots of brass percussion and loud sections, and can easily cover the soloist. But in this case, in this particular case, this concerto is so well crafted between the solo and the orchestra that we can hear the conversations very clearly when the orchestra needs to be completely in a second. Underneath the soloist, it will happen when the orchestra needs to take over and show some new thematic ideas or basically respond in a way to what the violin has presented first. Sibelius does it in a masterful, masterful way. So I love this idea of collaboration, right? Because also you have to have a soloist who can listen very well and that also can compromise when the orchestra takes over, the same way that the conductor needs to compromise when the soloist needs to shine and basically accompany, but in the best sense, in the best way possible, following the soloist or not imposing anything that the soloist, is not willing to. So it's always, for me, challenging in one hand to work with a soloist, but very gratifying, and it gives you that kind of sense of communications and collaboration with the solo that is very unique. And then basically it's the same what you do or what I do as a conductor with the orchestra. I mean, I always listen carefully and take ideas from the orchestra and we constantly collaborate, constantly give each other ideas and, you know, going back and forth and trying to make sense of music and working together.
It sounds like it's a wonderful match, Peter and you and the orchestra, Gerardo. We were talking about some troubles with Sibelius in his life, and Robert Schumann was somebody who had some struggles, emotional struggles and so forth in his life, but he was able to have his wonderful relationship with Clara and write some wonderful music, and this is one of those pieces.
Exactly, and it was exactly at the time, it was in 1850, when they moved to Düsseldorf in Germany, and apparently a beautiful city. I didn't have the chance to visit that place yet, along the Rhine River. And he was during a happy time, sort of, because he was struggling mentally. But, you know, he thought that moving and just to a new place, getting a new job, he was director of music of the city of Düsseldorf, will make him happier. And in a way, he was, relatively, and he managed to compose his last symphony. Even though there is a catalog of four symphonies, his symphony number four was written immediately after his symphony number one, and then revised. So that's why it was published as last one. But symphony number three, technically, is his last orchestral piece, his last symphony. And he called it the Rhenish because it was dedicated to the Rhine River that he apparently will see every day. And he was very attracted, very moved by that, by the scenery. But not only that, the symphony has five movements. And the movement number four, actually, he was inspired by a different place, and it was a cathedral in Cologne. So he traveled to Cologne, and apparently was at the year that when the cathedral was finished, and as he entered, he saw it as a magnificent place and got inspired by that. So then he decided to add a movement that will be, they call it Solemnly, that will be the title of the movement. And basically, it's a reproduction of what he saw, a reflection of what he saw, that beautiful, beautiful cathedral. And basically, you can hear that. It's basically like you're having like an entire orchestra playing like an organ. You know, like organ with 7 or 8 different manuals and keyboards, and every keyboard with a completely different sound and different color. And it's majestic the way he builds up, getting to the highest of the ceilings at the cathedral. And from there, he ends the symphony in a very uplifting mood, very noble, very melodic, very... very Schumann, you know, romantic, but with class, with good taste, sweet, intense at times, but very noble music. That's how I would call it.
And do I understand that he actually used in the orchestration some trombones? Was that in the cathedral movement?
Yes. Yeah. That's the trombones. Unfortunately for them, they have to sit for 3 movements doing nothing, and then they start actually movement 4. You know, in rehearsal the other day, we talked about that, because Beethoven actually does the same thing. He does the same in Symphony No. 5, in Symphony No. 6, in Symphony No. 9. He leaves the trombones for the very end, just for the glory. So that's why I try to convince the musicians that, yeah, there is a reason for that. So you are really important, and so that's why you come at the end, when everything needs to come to the final glory.
And you were saying, Gerardo, that this is one of your favorite symphonies. Is it because of the ability to bring us different moods and to take us to the heights of the cathedral and then have us end in a great romantic way? What is it that speaks to you in just in your soul?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's everything combined. I love the programmatic music. It connects me more with the music when there is a story behind or something that I can relate to. Because basically I can feel myself inside the cathedral. I can see myself walking around the River Rhine, that I did, not at Düsseldorf, but in different places, these much smaller towns. And I'll tell you, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful. But this could be, you know, I would leave the imagination, you know, open to our audience, and they can think whatever they like to and feel where the music transports you. But for me, when there is a program, I tend to connect more to it, and I feel that this is one of the biggest accomplishments of Schumann in his very difficult career and as a person, you know, all the struggles that he went through, but also as an amazing composer of piano music, of leaders, of, you know, that you can also hear in this symphony. Everything is so melodic and so beautifully crafted. The harmonies are so interesting, and the orchestration is very colorful. And all of the combination of things that makes me really love and get really into the music as I conduct, as I perform, or as I listen.
Symphony No. 3 of Schumann, this work, the Violin Concerto by Sibelius, and to begin, the Roman Carnival Overture of Hector Berlioz. It's the final season concert, Romantic Rhapsodies, this Tuesday, May 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Arts Center in downtown Williamsport. We spoke with Gerardo Edelstein, music director and conductor of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra. And if you need more information, on the web, williamsportsymphony.org. The guest violinist in the Sibelius Concerto will be Peter Sorotin, who is the concertmaster of the Harrisburg Symphony. That's this Tuesday, May 13th at 7:30 p.m. And it's the Community Arts Center in downtown Williamsport. Maestro Edelstein leading the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, williamsportsymphony.org, williamsportsymphony.org.